Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer 89.5 KVRF presents Dog Talk Radio, hosted by Robert and Michelle Forto. On Dog Talk Radio, we do just that. Talk dogs. Everything from introducing a new puppy into your home to the health and welfare of your canine senior citizen and all points in between. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Dog Talk Radio here on KVRF 89.5 in the Mattsu Valley of Alaska. And sitting beside me is the lead trainer for Alaska Dog Works and our co-host for Dog Talk Radio, Michelle Forto. Michelle, how's it going?
It's going quite well. I'm about ready for some snow.
It is getting closer as we speak. We are in a heat wave here like the rest of the country. We're in about 85 degrees here in Palmer, which is pretty dang hot for Alaska.
You know, I saw earlier it was reported that it was 91 in the shade up in Willow where we live. But all that aside, I'm really excited about today's guest on our show.
You know, I am too, with the owner of 30 mixed breed Alaskan Husky dogs. I'm always interested to find out what exactly is in their makeup, and we may find the answers to some of those questions today. We're going to be talking to Dr. Neil Fretwell, PhD, a veterinary geneticist, and he does veterinary doggy DNA tests. Dr. Fretwell, how are you?
Good evening, Robert. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Where are you calling from today?
I'm actually in sunny Las Vegas right now, so it's even hotter here than it is with you.
I would love to be down in Vegas right now, get away from it a little bit and enjoy some of that sun. So introduce yourself for us, Dr. Fretwell. Tell us who you are and what you're all about.
So I'm the general manager of Mars Veterinary, and we sell a doggy DNA test, as you said, mainly designed to help people who have mixed breed dogs and who've adopted them from a shelter or a rescue to find out exactly what breeds are present in the recent ancestry of their dog. But we can also use it to obviously verify and certify that people have a purebred dog, or also, you know, look at these designer dogs, which are becoming more popular, and letting them know whether it really is a true 50-50 cross between two different purebred breeds or a more complex ancestry of many of these designer dogs do actually have.
You know, that is so important to a lot of folks out there today. They want to know what their dog is. And, you know, we train a lot of dogs at our dog training center, and almost always you will hear them say, oh, he's a Labrador mix or he's a German Shepherd mix. They always quantify it with one breed at the start of the mix. So I guess they're having a little bit of a favorite there. Do you often hear that when people speak about what their dog is? It's a Lab mix or a German Shepherd mix, et cetera?
All the time, and normally that predominant breed is based on what they perceive they see in the dog.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily, in our experience, translate to the fact that that is actually the most dominant breed that's present in the ancestry.
And if you could, Doctor, tell us a little bit about where this came about. You know, obviously we know all about DNA tests, and often we know about it through court dramas and crime shows and that sort of thing when we talk about DNA. But how did it come about in terms of figuring out what the breed is of the dog? Obviously, it's a very important thing to a lot of folks.
Yeah, so this started way back in about 2003, really, where we've been doing some work with some external researchers at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle. And every time we talked to veterinarians, they said the number one question people ask me with a mixed breed dog is what breeds are in it? You know, what is it? So we realized there was an opportunity to provide a service to help people find that out. And the researchers at the Cancer Research Center had developed a technology whereby they could take a sample of DNA from an individual dog, test a number of DNA markers within that sample, and compare them to the known American Kennel Club purebred dogs in a database using a very powerful computer program. And out of that, you could estimate the contributions from all the different purebred breeds to the genome of that tested mixed breed dog.
Michelle, you have a question?
No.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Doctor. I'm sorry for the interruption.
I was just going to say, we took that technology and adapted it by really sampling over 200 different purebred breeds, so that we had a really comprehensive analysis that could give people a very simple printout of the three-generational pedigree predicted by the computer for their dog.
You know, I understand that the AKC holds the largest database in the world for holding on to these genomes. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, so I think the American Kennel Club is probably the biggest dog registry in terms of numbers, and that obviously has a very wide range of breeds. I mean, there are, I think, 400 breeds known worldwide, and the American Kennel Club only cover probably 185 of them to date, I think. But obviously, you know, the test we sell is mainly sold in the United States, so we wanted to ensure that we had a very good understanding of the United States dog population.
Right. So our first experience with DNA testing occurred in 2007 when we purchased our daughter's German Shepherd. He was imported from Slovakia, and the breeder that we purchased him from in Colorado had to have both parents' DNA ran in Slovakia and submitted to the American Kennel Club to get his litter registered. And that was quite an interesting experience for Robert and I. And I've noticed that more and more breeders are leaning to doing the DNA testing of the sire and dam so that they can track their litters and their offspring and find out who's breeding and when and how the line is going from, you know, mom and dad number one all the way down.
Yes, I mean, it's obviously quite a simple technique, but very effective to prove that the dogs in a litter are truly the parents of, you know, this dam and this sire. And of course, you know, with the price people pay for purebred dogs, you know, it's a small price to pay to really validate that and make sure that, you know, what you're paying for is truly, you know, the progeny of the dogs you think they are, because the system before that was based on trust, really. And, you know, accidents do happen in dog matings just as they do, you know, in other species. So, you know, sometimes when you're a breeder and you've got a large number of dogs in the kennel, you're not always sure that the dog you think is tied with the dam is actually the true sire.
Oh, and boy, do we know that by experience. You know, I find it quite interesting as a dog trainer to follow my clients. I've had a handful actually purchase your DNA testing materials, and they report back, you know, your guys' is pretty much the most accurate that I have recommended. There are a few out there, you know, copycatters and things like that, and they're not as thorough. I've noticed that you might pull the same two or three breeds for every single dog out there, and I've had clients test their purebred dogs, and I've had clients test their mutts, and their purebreds came up with more varieties than their mutts did.
That is not normally the case with purebred dogs, but the algorithm we use is definitely, well, until recently, has definitely been optimized for mixed breed dogs in order to identify those. So what we've done with the new version of our test, 2.0, is enable people, if they want to compare their dog against a purebred profile, we've actually added some additional tests to our test now such that they can compare their dog to the known AKC dogs in our database. And we find that that is a much more accurate measure for purebred dogs than the original test algorithm that we had, which was really designed to identify mixed breed dogs. So that algorithm was really specifically expecting to find more than two dogs in the breed's ancestry, which is why it was sold as a mixed breed test. What we find now when we run that on purebred dogs is they normally come up with the purebred breed, you know, as a significant component, but occasionally there will be other closely related breeds reported if the dog doesn't match perfectly the AKC signature.
We're talking to Dr. Neil Fretwell today. He is a veterinary geneticist, and we are talking about doggy DNA test. Dr. Fretwell, obviously this has to be a very simple procedure, or you're going to have some type of error on the testing. What is the procedure for collecting the DNA from these dogs?
So we have two types of tests, Robert. One is a blood-based test that can only be purchased through a veterinarian, and that is the gold standard, really. Blood is a very clean source of DNA and very low risk for contamination with another blood sample from another dog. So obviously, as long as your veterinarian uses, which of course they will, use clean syringes and then use the tubes we provide, that's a very pure DNA source, and we have a very low risk of anything going wrong there. Obviously, cheek swabs, which is the DIY or the kit that you can purchase off the internet or through retail shops, that is a more complex source because just by the very fact you're rubbing inside of a dog's cheek, there are other things that can be in there. So, you know, obviously, dogs, normally their food, obviously, but sometimes they can interact with other dogs, and that can transfer material from other breeds into their dog's mouth. And then, obviously, dogs sometimes can eat strange things as well. And so that means that on that cheek swab, sometimes you can get a little bit of bacteria or occasionally, you know, mixtures from other breeds as well. So we do see a higher failure rate of, where we have to do retests from the swab-based format. But generally, that's still pretty low, around about the sort of 2% mark.
What's the difference in the cost?
So in terms of the cost for us in the laboratory, it's very... little difference. I mean, it's slightly more expensive to run a blood sample, but the actual analysis procedure in the laboratory is pretty similar. Obviously, getting the product to people via the web, selling via a website, is a much less cost, a more cost-effective way of getting the product to people. So generally, the cost to the consumer or to the dog owner will be much lower on the web than it would be if you were going through, say, the veterinarian or a retail store, which have a different cost structure for getting the product to the customer.
So the sample is collected from either the veterinarian or the dog owner, and then is that test mailed to a laboratory that you guys operate, or is it mailed to, you know, a variety of labs, and then the test is conducted?
No, it's mailed to a single location, which is in Lincoln, Nebraska, and that is our expert lab that conducts all the tests. And obviously, it's beneficial to have it in a single place because, you know, we've really optimized the quality control with the barcodes that we use to track all the samples, and really, you know, ensure that the process is run repeatedly every time correctly. We have known controls that we run with every batch. So obviously we're doing everything we can to make sure that the sample that came from the owner or whether it came from the veterinarian is uniquely identified through the testing process, and the accurate DNA results there are passed into our computer for the breed analysis and then on to the owner for the report.
And what are the protection mechanisms to protect the sample, whether it be blood? I mean, is it in ice or something of that nature, or is it pretty safe just to ship through express mail or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, blood is actually a very reliable and stable source of DNA. I mean, a lot of people don't realize this, but unless you freeze thaw it a lot or put really extreme temperatures to the blood, it's very stable. And before we launched the test, we did a lot of heating and thawing and freezing studies just to show that, you know, the blood sample would withstand both the extremes of heat and cold that can really be experienced depending wherever you are in the United States. So we know that, you know, the transit mechanism we have is very stable. The main challenge for us is actually with the cheek swabs. If they're not dried out properly before put back into the mail, that's where bacteria can start to grow in transit. And really is the main reason for failure of the swabs when we get them into the lab. We'll make the DNA from them, but they fail to really yield reliable marker data on a minority of occasions. And that's all due to the overgrowth of bacteria, if you like, which obviously would have started in the dog's mouth.
Very interesting stuff. We're talking to Dr. Neil Fretwell. He is a veterinary geneticist, and we're talking about his Wisdom Panel, which does DNA testing for the dogs. Doctor, once you get the test and the test results or the sample is with you, how long does it take for the owners to get the test results back?
So we always try and get them back as quickly as possible, but obviously there is a batching process that needs to happen. There's a lot of quality control. So normally that ranges somewhere between the 1 week to 2 weeks from receipt at our lab. So we send people an email as soon as the test is received, and we always try to get back tests within 2 weeks of that receipt in the lab, and often we exceed that, often by a week. But it all depends, obviously, in where in the batching process that lab is, that sample is received, and, you know, how busy the lab is at the time to really give an exact amount of time, how that long that will take.
You know, I'm thinking about all of the different ways you could use this test, of course, in purebred dogs and in dogs that perform in one aspect or another, whether it be canine athletes in terms of mushing or in the show ring or obedience ring or whatnot. But how many folks just send it in just want to know, you know, maybe more of a, hey, I just want to check out what Fido is versus the really serious consumers that use your product?
Well, I think that's the main utility right now is you know, people really want to know, it's fun for them to find out what breeds are in their mixed breed dog, particularly if they don't know the ancestry. And we know probably over 50% of the dogs that we get sent in, the owners have got them from a shelter or adopted from a friend or a breed rescue. And they really want to know why their pet is behaving and looks the way it does. And oftentimes, you know, they'll look like a certain breed but won't have that breed anywhere in them. And you know, we always joke, but the Labrador is the sort of most common pet imposter, if you like, because it seems to be all the dominant traits in the Labrador breed. So, of course, when you cross different mixed breed dogs, you can often get a dog that looks like a Labrador. And that's been proven in a classic study back in the 60s where someone crossed some researchers crossed a Cocker Spaniel with a Basenji, two very distinct-looking breeds. And in the first generation of that cross, the first litter, they actually had dogs that looked more like Border Collies and Labradors than they did any other breed, which was shocking. And as they continued that cross on and crossed some of the progeny, they looked even more like Labradors. So, you know, what you see in a dog, it's very difficult to determine what breeds are present from just looking at the an individual dog.
And that's where we started the conversation, because a lot of times they will say what that breed is based on what they look like, whether it be that German Shepherd mix or that Border Collie mix, et cetera. Let's ask a couple of veterinary genetic questions if we can. We'll stay on the DNA side of it as well. But some questions that I'm sure our readers would, or our listeners would like to know. The first one is, do you have any idea, Dr. Fretwell, what the most popular breed is in the United States in regards of DNA? You know, most people think it's the Labrador or that German Shepherd, but what is the most prominent breed in the United States in terms of DNA?
Well, I can certainly give you that information with regard to our test and what we've observed over the last sort of 7 years in the mixed breed population. So we know pretty consistently the German Shepherd has come up as number one in mixed breed dogs that we've detected, and number two has been the Labrador. So, you know, you're definitely the most common purebred dogs are at the top of that list. But what we see further down the list in the top 10, which are perhaps surprising to most people, are two breeds that you wouldn't expect to be in the top 10 based on purebred commonality, if you like, and that's the American Staffordshire Terrier and also the Chow Chow. But they are much more common in mixed breed dogs than they are in the purebred population.
And why is that, you think?
I think that generally reflects the where people who are using our test are getting the dogs from. They're the dogs that tend to be found in shelters, because when we go around shelters, we don't see many Yorkshire Terriers, we don't see many of the small fluffy dogs, if you like, but we do see a lot of the medium to larger sized dogs that, you know, oftentimes people might be put off perhaps by a German Shepherd background, perhaps, because obviously they've got a reputation for barking or for being good guard dogs, but not everyone's looking for that in their companion in the home. So I think it really reflects the makeup of dogs that we see in shelters.
You know, the next question, Dr. Fretwell, is a question that we have ourselves, and I'm sure a lot of other folks do if they breed their purebreds. And in our kennel in particular, just this past September, we had a litter of pups whom we know the mother and the father of the puppies, but there is so much difference in what they look like, their ear set, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, they are both mixed breeds, but they look so much different. You know, we got black and white, and we have, you know, tan and white, and, you know, so on and so forth. Is that just that genetic material that is coming back from all of that history that both of those dogs have in their lines? Or how can you explain that to our listeners so they get that idea of why all of their puppies look so differently in their purebred litters?
Well, and that's classically what we see if you cross two mixed breed dogs, because obviously in a mixed breed dog you're carrying different information from different genomes, some of which will be hidden to the actual, if you look at the cyril or the dam, they won't be expressing all the genes they're carrying because some things are dominant over others. So, for example, black coat color is dominant over brown, and white spotting gene is a dominant effect. But by that, I mean a little white spot on the chest or the paws or across the tip of the tail. That is a gene that we know is a dominant gene, and if you inherit that gene, you will have some white spotting. If you inherit two copies of that gene, you will have majority white, so you'll have more white than actually color on the coat, like a Jack Russell, for example. So depending on what genes the parents are carrying, and as you mentioned, that can affect the set of the ears in terms of whether they're prick or they're drop ears. It can affect the tail as well and the curl of the tail. So depending on what dominant and recessive genes the parents are carrying and on random how they contributed to each of the different offspring, and inheritance is a really random event in nature. So you only inherit one of the two copies of each gene from your mother and from your father. So it's no surprise that the litter will look very different because by chance they're going to be getting different genetic influences from their mother and their father than their other littermates.
And, Doctor, one final generic, I guess you could say, genetic question is, what happens when the female dog breeds with two different breed male dogs? Let's say a Labrador breeds with a Siberian Husky and a Golden Retriever. What happens to those offspring when they are, you know, when they're formed and born and whatnot? Are they going to have the DNA of all three of those dogs or just two?
No, you would normally get, it would be really interesting. This happens a lot and people don't realize that it's possible to get multiple sires in a litter with the same dam. So obviously when the bitch is on heat, then she can definitely mate with more than one male dog. What we see there is you would normally see the litter mates would have, they would always have the mother's, 50% of the mother's DNA, say it was a purebred Labrador, but each one would have a chance, either 50-50, of getting the alternate sire's DNA. So in that example, you would probably have some that were Labrador Border Collie crosses and some that were Labrador German Shepherd crosses, depending on if it was a Border Collie and a German Shepherd, there were two potential sires. But you wouldn't get all three in one particular dog.
Right. Michelle, you have a question for the doctor?
I'm interested to find out, doctor, how often are people... you know, what's your feedback? Are they elated at what you've discovered, or are they upset with what's discovered? I mean, I know a lot of people have it set in their hearts that they, you know, rescued this dog that the shelter is telling them is this breed and possibly this breed, and then they discover that it's, you know, a chow chow mixed with a beagle.
Yes, we find it's very black and white. So people either love the results and they're really pleased to find out, you know, truly what the influences are in their dog. And then some people just, it's really challenging their preconception of the dog they know and love. And oftentimes that can be a very difficult message for people. So our customer care team spend a lot of time explaining the results to people in occasions like that to really help them understand how, you know, a dog that may on the outside look like a Labrador is actually a Chow Chow cross with something else, and it's just mimicking a Labrador in appearance. Obviously, we've got a lot of experience and have seen a lot of dogs where we know that to be the case, but most individual people, of course, are looking at the dog and they see the traits they see, and of course, in their mind, the dog looks, the breed that dog looks most closely like is a Labrador. So to them, it's a leap of faith, if you like, to believe that dog could have very different ancestry in its background. And, you know, every individual dog and every individual situation is different depending on that bond and you know, people's willingness to sort of understand the science, really, or ability to understand the science behind it.
Doctor, we have time for just a couple of more questions, and I want to get in a couple of areas that I have a lot of experience in, and that is in the court system in terms of dogs and dogs' behavior. I was an animal behaviorist for a long time in Denver, and if you know, in Denver, Colorado, there is a breed ban for pit bulls, and often that breed ban is based purely on the observations of what that dog looks like and what that dog acts like at the shelter or at the animal control. Are your tests accurate or admissible in terms of a case like that? And if they are, how would somebody go about using that in a legal form?
So I think there's a number of different questions there. I mean, I think the first one is really, what is a pit bull terrier? So, you know, where the dog is being identified on visual means alone, I would say that, you know, obviously, if that's the local way of doing it, our test results are probably going to be irrelevant anyway, in that, you know, you can't necessarily reliably predict what a dog is going to look like from the breed background. So if people are making that judgment on what the dog looks like, the DNA results are really going to be irrelevant. I mean, we certainly know that they're accurate, and the challenge, of course, is that there are many bully breeds that will give an appearance like a pit bull type dog, because, you know, really what you're selecting for there is a large head, which is carried by many breeds, this brachycephalic muscle mass.
Right.
If you think about the bully breed family, you've got the American Staffordshire Terrier, the Staffy, the Bull Mastiff, I could go on. If you cross them with a Jack Russell, many of those are going to look like or resemble to many people a Pit Bull Terrier. So I think that is where the challenge for the courts and for people interpreting our test results is that, you know, there's no way to reliably predict what a dog will look like or behave like based on its breed background.
Well, Doctor, I think what Robert's trying to get at, and you're right there on it, and I know that he did ask a lot of questions, you know, being married to him for 15 years, he does have a tendency to ask questions in riddle-like form. What he's asking is, if someone in Denver, let's say, says, you know, I my dog's being taken from me, I got to fight the court, they say he's a pit mix, I need to prove that he's not, and they do the DNA test, would your test stand up in court showing that what that dog is?
I think that's a good question. I think the answer is it would depend on the court and whether they're willing to admit the information. So I do believe people have used the test for that reason, more commonly with housing associations where there is restrictions on breed backgrounds. They have used the test to show that the dog isn't, for example, an American Staffordshire mix, it's a Staffy mix. Mm-hmm. I know that in the UK that people have used it to show that the dog that they bought was a purebred Neapolitan Mastiff in a similar case where, you know, that they were being accused of having a pit bull. So it certainly has happened. I couldn't reliably tell you that every single court will, you know, admit that evidence, because I think that that's definitely down to the individual jurisdiction of the courts. And, you know, I'm not an expert on legal process, so I definitely wouldn't want to commit that is definitely something that would be taken into account. But we certainly haven't attended any court cases that I know of that have utilized DNA evidence.
We're talking to Dr. Neil Fretwell today. He is a veterinary geneticist, and he has a company that performs DNA tests on dogs, so you can finally figure out exactly what Fido is, whether he's that lab German Shepherd mix or that Border Collie Siberian mix or what have you. Doctor, I just have one final question, and that is, when a litter is registered and the DNA is performed by a company like yours, is there some type of history there that people can go back to and say, you know, I want to find out more about you know, a generation that was born in 2013, possibly in a few years? Is there some type of database that is held there, or is it a one-and-done test and you got your results and that's it?
No, we always keep all the DNA information on file, Robert, because people do come back to us with follow-up questions. So there's many reasons for that. I mean, often, you know, obviously someone lost their dog and it became found at a shelter and they needed to prove that that was their dog. We would be able to retest the dog and actually show that the DNA samples match. So, you know, we want to have the ability to do that. Also, you know, as we improve the test and we add more breeds, sometimes people believe that they've got a dog, a breed in their background that our test couldn't cover at the time when they tested it. And then we're able to go back and retest against our latest database, if you like. So obviously that is a benefit to people. We do have a breeder product as well that is designed to help people breed for diversity within their breed. So obviously, as you know, many breed clubs are closed populations. And what we do there is we show them, if they will send in multiple dogs that were potential sires for that dam, for example, we can tell them which is the most diverse and best combination to breed with their dam to give them the optimal results in terms of genetic diversity. And a number of breed clubs have been working with us on this and used it to actually show very positive and statistically significant increases in litter size just by selecting for more diverse offspring. And it's really helped them to maintain the genetic diversity of the breed. And I know it's been well received by members of the breed club.
Very fascinating stuff, Doctor. You know, I could talk on and on to you about this. This is a subject that I have been passionate about ever since I've been involved with dogs for well over 20 years. I'm so fascinated by the evolution of dogs, where they come from, and, you know, what makes dogs so popular or not so popular in terms of ownership and training and whatnot. My final question, or at least point to make, is how do people find out more about your company? You guys have a website, a phone number, et cetera.
Yes, the best place to go for more information if people are interested is wisdompanel.com, and that's our website. There's lots of information on the site, and there's also information if people are interested in buying, they can either buy on the site direct, or there's information from where you could get it in the retail or veterinarians as well. So that would give you a lot more background information about the test as well, and the breeds we cover and things like that.
Very good. Dr. Fretwell is our guest today, Dr. Neil Fretwell. He's a veterinary geneticist, and he owns a company that performs DNA tests on your dogs. What is the name of the company again, Doctor?
It's Mars Veterinary. I'm the general manager. I'm the owner. So, I'm also, my background's R&D, so I did help develop the test over the last sort of 10 years.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, Doctor, thank you for joining us today. I know you're about 2.5 hours away from us, 3 hours, I guess, in terms of Vegas. I hope you enjoy your time there in Vegas, and we will definitely get over some links to you guys so you can share the interview as you wish, okay?
Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Michelle. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
And with that, we're just out of time. Next week's show, Michelle, any ideas?
We're going to be speaking more about service dogs and proper choosing of a service dog. We're also going to talk about breeders and how to choose a puppy.
How to choose a puppy. And, of course, I would highly recommend doing one of those DNA tests on that dog to find out if that dog is exactly as it claims. So today we had an exciting conversation with Dr. Neil Fretwell. And we look forward to talking to folks on Facebook and Twitter after the show. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Just follow @DogWorks Radio. We look forward to your comments, questions, and concerns. Until next time, goodbye.